Hello and welcome again to The Doctor Is In, featuring Dr. Greg Silverman, Coastal Cardiology and Associates. They're on Elizabeth Street, and the phone number is
887-2900. And we are open for business in the era of COVID. We are changing the way we do business a little bit, in as much as we're limiting the amount of people that you can bring, and we are testing everybody as they enter into our office. We are checking to make sure they don't have fevers, and certainly asking them questions about their travel, or if they have fevers, or if they've had coughs, or sort of the basic questions of, do you have a flu or something transmittable, versus if you're just have a just allergies. And so we are somewhat limiting, and we will be opening up more as we get used to this new system.
How do you police the number of people that get on the elevator?
Yeah,
that, to your office.
Yeah, I think we allow them to make their own decisions on how many people get on an elevator. And I know that people are a little more cautious. I've noticed this. People really don't like crowded elevators anymore, at least not for now. They are limiting their own, and they will say, I'll wait for the next one a lot of times.
Recovery from most illnesses depends on your general health going in. Surgery is always a different matter, because bodies respond, and it's not necessarily a shock per se, but it sort of is to your system. And that's why they come in your room and try to get you up as soon as possible and walk you around a little bit and get your blood flow.
Correct. Because we know that by sitting still, there's only negative things happen. One of the major potential problems of any type of surgery are blood clots, where if your blood pools and you are not active, blood will pool, and when blood pools, it clots. And what we're trying to do is prevent those. We're trying to open up your lungs. We're trying to get the rest of your body physically as good as it could be before you go home or to some rehab facility. It certainly depends on a lot of how physically fit you were before going into the surgeries. That's true.
It's really interesting that they had to, and I'm talking medically, had to strike a happy medium between getting you up and getting you moving, and don't do too much.
Right. There's very few people who try to do too much after most of our surgeries, I can tell you that. Having said that, it is very common for me to have to pre-op people. That is, right, before you go into surgery, they will ask, what is your cardiovascular risk of doing okay during that surgery? Is there anything that needs to be fixed before you go into surgery? And really, one of the big things is, can you walk around a block? Can you walk up two flights of steps? Mm-hmm. That seems pretty easy, but for a lot of people, that's not particularly easy. And that portends potential problems after surgeries, any kind of surgeries, as it turns out.
I wanted to talk to you about the effects of salt,
right,
on your body. I read, I forget, but salt was at one time as valuable as gold.
Right.
The ships would come with it, and you would hear drum beats alerting people that that magic stuff that makes everything taste so wonderful is coming, and we have a chance to get it. And it's, I guess, one of the most popular condiments,
probably the most popular condiment. Yeah. It's interesting. It when we were out on the plains, when humans were out on the plains, the average amount of salt was something like 500 milligrams a day. You only got salt from the animals you ate and the water you drank, basically. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, that led to a physiology in humans that retains salt. Your kidneys work by either exchanging salt, and remember, salt is fluid. Salt is water. Where salt goes, water goes. And ultimately, we have become basically addicted to salt. Same thing with sugar. We're basically addicted to sugars. And we don't need to be. Over the last 5 years or so, the powers that be, the American Heart Association, the American College of Cardiology, have both put out recommendations to lower salt, because it is the salt in your diet, basically too much salt physiologically, that increases blood pressure. It changes the neurohormone status in your blood. It changes the way you metabolize salt. And ultimately, that leads to downstream breakdown. It leads to hardening of the arteries, if you will. And over time, hypertension leads to problems primarily in your brain. It increases risk of strokes and can lead to damage to your heart over time. So we have been, over the last 5 years at least, really recommending lifestyle changes that include lowering the salt in your diet. There's a lot of myths out there about salt. The idea that the more salt, the better. I will save water if I do salt. Or even the myth of, well, I don't put any salt on my food, so I don't get any. Well, those are all myths that need to be debunked. Remember, about 70% of your salt that you take in comes from just the food you eat. You don't have to put anything on it. Processed food has lots of it in there, so you don't generally have to put any of it on there. The idea is that if I lower my salt, my blood pressure is going to come down is absolutely true. Is it going to come down to too low? There are very few patients that require that kind of salt, that have that kind of a problem with salt. I do have some, I will tell you that. Having said that, the majority, 99% plus, really probably get too much salt in their diet.
Well, you know, when they send you, when you're in the military and you get stationed in a tropical zone, like Vietnam, for example.
Right.
You get salt tablets.
Right.
And they want you to take salt tablets just about 2 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon, and 2 more in the afternoon, and you just keep taking them.
Right.
And, I throw them in my mouth, and I'm about to wash them down, and I go, you know, these really do taste salty.
They are salt. I think we've pretty much debunked that myth that you need sodium if you're going to sweat a lot.
Yeah.
Because the primary thing in sweat is just water. And so it's very rare that people who are sweating that much or exercising that much require any salt before their blood pressure goes down. Your kidneys, your adrenal glands will do a very nice job of retaining salt so that you can retain fluid.
Keep you from passing out.
Really, the most important thing is drinking water, not Gatorade, which has a fair amount of salt in it. Those have all been pretty much debunked, those myths. You can lose a lot of sweat before you have to start worrying about salt intake. So now I think the best physiology, the best really treatment for that is just water. Keep drinking water and lots of it, because you can sweat out a lot, certainly in places like Vietnam or Corpus in the summer or wherever. People who are out on ranches working, they require water to take in.
Well, I remember when I first moved here, I thought, geez, I'm going to have to go through taking salt tablets again. But salt tablets just sort of faded away. Salt makes your body hold on to water. And if you eat too much salt, the extra water stored in your body raises your blood pressure.
Your blood volume, correct. It's about volume. It's about fluid volume. And the increased volume that you get increases your blood pressure. Over time, also, that can damage your kidneys, as can the reabsorption of salt. So humans just don't need any. The new recommendations are about 2,300 milligrams of salt a day, which is probably higher than really needed. I think probably the powers that be came to an idea that said, well, this is at least doable.
I can get that in one sausage.
Yeah, that's right. You can get that in one. I had one guy once. He had, and certainly if you have heart failure, you really need to limit your salt. Which is the body's own way of saying, I don't have enough fluid getting to my kidneys, and they will retain salt. Right. I had one guy, he said, I'm eating pickles, a guy who had severe heart failure, said, I'm eating pickles. And I said, well, wait a minute. I told you not to eat salt. He says, yeah, but I wash them off first. Okay. Well, I didn't think that was the best idea ever.
Wow. So we've established the more salt you eat, the higher your blood pressure. The higher your blood pressure, the greater the strain on your heart.
Correct.
The greater the strain on your arteries.
Correct.
The greater the strain on your kidneys.
Correct.
And if you really deep in your heart would like to get dementia, this is a good way.
It's a great way to do it. Or have a stroke. That's a really good way to do it, is not understanding the connection between sodium or salt and fluid volume. And which ultimately is hypertension. That's right. That's the only way it is. Remember, one of the really good antihypertensives is furosemide or Lasix. There's also hydrochlorothiazide. There's a lot of drugs in that category of drugs of getting rid of fluid, diuretics. And
they won't work properly.
Well, they can if you limit how much salt you take in.
Yeah.
And they lower your blood pressure by lowering your fluid volume. And ultimately, that works. So eating
too much salt may mean that the blood pressure medicine you're taking is not going to work as well as it should.
Correct. And there's a large group of people that it just doesn't. And you can't, it's very difficult to get the ideas over to tell people, I'm not eating enough salt. That's just not true. That's just an old myth that has completely been debunked. The average American diet has over 3,500 milligrams of salt a day, and you just don't need that much. You just don't need that much.
You said salt and sugar.
Yeah.
It was easier for me to just say, okay, I quit sugar.
Yeah, and that's a one big thing is people require full sugar. They get used to the taste. But remember, if you just eat a soda, if you just drink one soda has about 140 calories versus if you just drink water or even diet soda, which is one calorie. Now, we won't talk about the potential problems associated with the artificial sweeteners. Let's not go there. But if you just, the difference between one soda a day, that's 140 calories. A pound of fat is about, let's see, it's 2.2 kilograms, and that's times 9, is about 1,800 calories. Just think of it, 140 calories times 10, that's a pound a week and a half. It's 3 pounds a month. That seems pretty simple to me. I mean, the numbers just sort of, that seems pretty simple to me. How hard is it to not drink a soda versus drinking water and losing 3 pounds a month? That to me is a problem.
Well,
a mathematical problem.
People use that rationalization tool that we all have that works so well. I need the caffeine in the mornings.
Okay.
It's a caffeine and a sugar rush.
Okay. Well, I mean,
got salt.
Even diet sodas have caffeine in them.
Yeah.
Or coffee has caffeine in it, and you can put sweet and low in that. So I see it in people, and I say, you know, you've got to take, here's the numbers, here's some responsibility that you can do. We're all adults here. You have to act like an adult at some point, and you have to take your own responsibility at some point. I think the points are that we are trying to get information out to people, and they have to offer to take it. That's part of it. Yeah, I can't sit there with you all day long.
Right. So how many grams of salt did you say?
Well, the recommendations are about 2,300 milligrams. So, you know, if you don't salt your food, you get about 3,000 or 3,500 milligrams a day. If you don't do anything, including not salt your food.
Right.
So you got to really, the part of it is you kind of have to read the labels and you kind of have to cook for yourself a lot of times. You have to start saying to yourself, all right, I'm going to be able to be responsible for myself and start making my own food rather than eat processed food or going out to dinner all the time. You got to be really careful about the amount of salt you put in, especially if you have heart failures.
You're listening to The Doctor Is In with Dr. Greg Silverman, Coastal Cardiology and Associates on Elizabeth Street. We're talking about how to eat less salt and improve your health. And most of the salt we eat every day is hidden. Roughly 80% of the salt we eat is from processed foods, bread, biscuits, breakfast cereals, and prepared ready meats or takeaways. Only 20% comes from the salt that we add while cooking or using at the table. So that's an awful lot of salt.
It is. It's a lot of salt, and it's easy to get the idea that I'm not getting any salt. You are. If you go out, if you buy things, generally they have this. So it's a little bit hard to do, and you have to make a concerted effort to do it, but it's very, you can do it. You, the average person out there, if all they did was cook for themselves a couple times a week, you can limit the amount of salt you get.
Well, I had an experience just a couple of weeks ago when we had a roast with gravy. And gravy, I just found out, is one of those things you can season to taste, put it in the refrigerator, and when you bring it out, it's like the salt phantom has gotten in there. And yeah, and waded through your gravy because it is really, really salty. So the best way to keep from doing that is throw away the salt shaker.
But right.
I haven't been able to do that yet.
Right. I very frequently get patients who come in and say, my feet are swollen. And rather than say, your heart is bad, I ask them, what did you have for dinner the night before or a couple nights before? Because if you had that, and it's very common that people said, well, I went out, I had a big Mexican food out at a restaurant, or I had barbecue. Guess what? You got it. And that's where your swelling comes from. And I don't need to change treatment. I need to tell them, here's the problem. Here's how you change this. And it's remarkable. Within a week, generally their legs are back to normal. If you have congestive heart failure, that's where I come in. If you have a weak heart or for whatever reasons, then you really need to limit that. And sometimes those people do need help with medications to get rid of that kind of fluid. And it really is a low sodium that these people really need.
So there are actually low sodium versions of your favorite sauces or gravies?
And more frequently at the stores, there are low-sodium soups on the packaging. And now there's no per se recommendations of what low-sodium means. It means, I can tell you, even if it's half, that's a lot of sodium. Even if they cut it by 80%, that's still in most things, in soups and prepackaged things, it's a lot of sodium by and large.
Well,
because that's how they get the flavor. That's how they get that flavor that seems to be people want. But you understand there are other ways to flavor your foods. There are no salts. There are salt substitutes. There are, I recommend Mrs. Dash a lot of times. All these things just don't have sodium in them, but they add to the flavors.
And people who think that they are doing their health a lot of good, which sea salt.
Well, remember, that's right. That's the other myth, which is, I'm glad you brought that up. Sea salt is salt. It is. It's ultimately, does it really matter where it comes from? It's sodium chloride in whatever form you want, whether it's chemically made or you take it out and dry it off. I was in Peru and they have these poor kids. They have these salt pools. They're about 6 by 6 foot shallow pools where the salt comes out of the mountain. The salt water comes out of the mountain, and they just put them in these pools and let them dry. Then they scoop it up and put it in bags and schlep it up the mountains and
sell it.
I don't know, Peruvian salt, but it's still sodium chloride. You can package it however you want. It can be blue. It can be. They're now making salts, certain flavored salts, which seems to me to be redundant, but they're making flavored salts. So they're still the same thing.
HEB, reading the labels, I'll know you have listened to this and are looking for low sodium content soup and other things.
Or even better is to make the soups yourself, so that you absolutely know what goes into that soup rather than buy the prepackaged stuff. We've made it so easy, but ultimately damaging by doing it that way.
Yeah, it is. The scary thing is we're not scared enough to think about the things we're doing to our innards.
Yeah. Again and again and again. That's basically what this show is, is figuring out ways to go around the path that we're on as Americans. And in a world of plenty, some of the things that we do are harmful to us over the long term. Now, they may not be harmful to us in the short term, although there are some things are. But in the long term, they are. And that's part of the problem with hypertension and why I keep saying people have to know what their numbers are. And if you know what your numbers are, you can have a better idea of how to fix them. And when I say your numbers, you need to know what your blood pressure is. You need to know what your sugar levels are. Now it's called hemoglobin A1C, which is a long-term marker of glucose in your body.
Right.
And you ought to know what your cholesterol levels are. And all those things now are coming into play there because we now have very good medicines to help reduce your risk. Now, I can't completely prevent anything. I can't go out there and say, you're never going to have a heart attack. But I can say, if you are in this category of people, your risk of a heart attack is significantly less. And that's a lot of the medicines that we do.
Right.
I mean, anybody, as long as they're alive, has X risk of heart attacks. But if you are in certain categories, if you're diabetic, if you're hypertensive, if you're all those, your risk is X plus whatever percent it is, however high your blood pressure is. And I can tell you that the insurance companies and the people who are looking do know what those risks are. Mm-hmm. They know to a percentage. If you have blood pressure above this, your risk of a heart attack is this, and therefore your insurance is going to be higher.
You're listening to The Doctor Is There with Dr. Greg Silverman, Coastal Cardiology and Associates. We're talking about salt in your blood pressure and cutting down on the white stuff, and how it can save your life. Why does potassium help to lower?
Well, we're not exactly sure. It has to do with the way it's metabolized in your kidneys. That a lot of times salt gets exchanged for potassium in your kidneys. You have to have two ions that cross. Both are positive ions, and we believe that it has to do with the exchange in your kidneys. We believe that's what it has to do with. I also believe that if you're just eating potassium, you're watching yourself. I think it also says, well, I'm eating more of this, therefore I'm not eating that, and I think it has to do with that as well. But potassium can help lower blood pressure to a point. Now, certainly you don't want to get too much potassium because that leads to other things. That leads to irregular heartbeats and other things.
Right.
But you kind of just want to eat a well-rounded diet. I think that it is. There's a lot of these fad diets out there. I'm seeing a lot of these keto diets and a lot of these other things. And I think in my own mind, I'm thinking the reason that a keto diet works is that you limit the amount of sugars that you take in. You're limiting all the other calories that you take in from fats and all the other things. There was recently a pretty good study, and we brought it up on an earlier podcast about olive oil, that if you take in, I think it's 7 tablespoons of olive oil a day, your risk of cardiovascular disease drops by like 20% or 30%. It's the old Mediterranean diet kind of thing, which is fresh fish, high levels of fish, fresh fruits and vegetables, very little processed meats, and very little sugars, you know, very little sort of desserts and those kind of things, and maybe a glass of wine at night. And those diets have been shown to be actually beneficial. So how do you translate that into the American diet? Well, I mean, the American diet is full of fats and full of sugars and full of salt. And I think that that's an interesting statement, which is if you sit and just cook yourself, even with olive oil. Now, granted, you can't, nothing's fried. I mean, you don't want to go overboard on it, but there is some benefit to those kind of oil, to olive oil in particular, as opposed to other types of oils. And they don't quite explain the rationale for that, but it does seem to be true.
Well, I remember when there was a big scare about canola oil does this and canola oil does that. But we talked about your heart being the greatest example of a pump ever created. And the closed transportation system in your body is one of the marvels. And if you don't believe in God, you really should take a close look at your system.
You should.
Because you should. Somebody really knew what they were doing, especially when it comes to that organ called the kidney, that your transportation system sends that blood through there, and the kidneys go, you can go, nope, you have to go over here. Where? To the bladder. We're getting rid of you.
That's right.
Yeah.
The way the system works, you've got one organ that filters. You actually got several organs that filter, the liver and the kidneys. And those filter based on the volume. The kidneys filter based on the volume that they see, and the liver filters based on the chemicals it sees. So the kidneys have in their own an auto system that regulates your fluid volume. It regulates all that. And that's where the sodium is. And that's why it's so important there. That if you have too much, it kind of overwhelms the system. And the kidneys cannot process that much. I mean, there's only so much that they can do.
And there's a lot of stuff that we're asking the kidneys to do.
Oh, yeah. Mm. We are. We are.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting. I agree with you that you know, somewhere along the way, it's hard to believe that this wasn't that this just happened through natural selection. I mean, it's just the system is so beautifully tuned. I mean,
and we have so compromised it with fast food,
or just the things that we do. I mean,
we just want what we want, and we want it right now.
Right. And we drink too much, and we eat too much, and we say we deserve all this. And okay, well, you may deserve all this.
No.
But you deserve all this in moderation. And, you know,
in moderation.
Everything in moderation, including moderation, right? But, yeah, you have to look at yourself, and you have to believe in the power of you and the power of your body fixing itself and correcting itself and regulating itself.
I know the difference because I grew up in a small town.
Yeah.
My grandparents, we lived with them, and they had a chicken coop in the backyard, and then behind that was a garden, and there was always pea shelling or bean shelling. Every member of the family on the porch with a bowl in their lap, and we're shelling peas or beans, or we're snapping okra, or we're whatever the vegetable, shucking corn, putting potatoes under the house. So the fresh vegetables were on the table a lot, and there was never a lot of processed meat. It was freshly killed, frozen, and
cooked. Yeah, and cooked, and there wasn't much to it. Yeah,
and that high protein, high source of protein, the egg, that has received a lot of bad press for a long time. Absolutely, one of the highest sources of protein, and it's great for your testosterone levels.
It is, and we have come around on the egg now, because it's not a matter of the amount of cholesterol in the egg. It is a high protein source and relatively low fat. I mean, it's a very good, very cheap source of protein. You're good to go with that.
Yeah,
and your body can metabolize the cholesterol. It's okay with that. So, I think that's a very interesting thing. We're starting to try to get back to that with what do they call them? Locally sourced meats,
right?
You know, where you're and locally sourced things,
right?
Because we want it fresher, and I think that it's been interesting to see what's happened over the last 6 weeks with this COVID about what people are starting to do in their own home. People are starting to get back to baking bread.
Yeah,
people are starting to get back to growing gardens and things, and it's harder than it looks, but it's rewarding now. I mean, it's rewarding to see that you can grow your own tomatoes. Wow, mm-hmm. That's kind of neat. You can grow your own whatever, peas, peppers, whatever, and we're lucky here because we have springtime starting. You can start a vegetable garden in January. And you will start having tomatoes. I have patients who are already starting to have tomatoes. Yeah. I started about a month late. I've got tomatoes there, but they're not going to be ready for another probably month or so.
Valentine's.
Yeah, I do have peppers. I started a little bit late because I grew everything from seeds, and I started in January. So it took another month to get them going to where I could put them in pots. So, but my garden looks great now. I mean, it's really, I've had enough time and effort to put into this, and I can't wait to see what happens. I really think, knock on wood, I'm going to do okay this year with my garden.
No, it's whereas great. You've got something, you take care of it, you feed it, you talk to it, and I never ask for the car keys.
No, just water. And now, having said that, there are some bug problems, but we've gotten over that, I think. I certainly hope so. I don't think I have as many bugs now as I did before.
Okay, if you didn't get the first of this before we started gardening, it's salt. You've got to stop using so much salt. It affects just about everything in your body, from your heart to your arteries. They talk about hardening of the arteries. Your arteries get brittle.
They do.
Salt makes them brittle.
They do. It has to do with the, we believe it has to do with the force of contraction of your heart over a long period of time under pressure. And the higher the pressure, the more the force is against the vessels, against the blood vessels. It just, they kind of call it the water hammer effect, which is the amount of pressure per unit of time.
Yeah.
Over time causes a damage to the layers of your arteries, and over time that stiffens them and even makes the hypertension worse. So if you can reduce that, you have done yourself a long-term favor.
Like you've been listening to The Dr. Azim featuring Dr. Greg Silverman, Coastal Cardiology and Associates on Elizabeth Street. The phone number is
887-2900.
And what are we going to talk about next week?
I don't know. What do you think? What are you interested in?
I want to talk about recovery because I know it's on a lot of people's minds. And the likelihood of a COVID vaccine.
Okay.
You and I have talked about this off the... the common cold is...
A type of COVID virus.
Yeah, a type of COVID virus. It's not the same thing, but right. It's in the same family.
Right.
You could Google that.
Right.
And there's no vaccine for the common cold.
Yeah. I will look up some data this week. I saw something on one of mine about the chances of a vaccine coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw something that they said they may have it within the next 3 months. I don't know what that is. I didn't read the article, but we'll have some information on it within the week. We'll go over what's out there.
All right. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
You are absolutely welcome.
What's this dog's name?
I'm glad I could.
Did you know you're a Chihuahua? Why are you not barking?